Welcome to the Commonweal Policy Podcast with me, Jonathan Chaffee. I'm the Campaigns Officer here at Commonweal, and I'm joined this week, our last episode of 2020, and what a year it's been, by Dr. Craig Diehl, who's the Head of Policy and Research here at the think tank. Craig, welcome to the last episode, would you believe, of 2020?
And yeah, you're quite right, what a year it has been. who could have really predicted that this year would have gone the way it has? One thing I've been telling friends lately is May 2021 be more forgettable than this one.
It's been an incredible year for so many reasons, yeah. A very difficult one for so many reasons as well, but I don't know whether you or our listeners will agree with this, but it has also flown in, I think. I mean, when you think that back to the first few podcasts of this year, I mean, it just doesn't seem like any time at all. Maybe that's because of there being so much going on. You're so focused on the issues at hand. It's interesting. I mean, I suppose this episode is going to be just a chat between you and I about the year, reviewing some of the work that Commonweal's done, looking forward to plans for next year. It's often forgot, but there was a very serious military exchange between Iran and the United States at the start of 2020. And that would have been big enough. But to then roll on to the global pandemic, to lockdown, to the continuing unpredictability of Brexit, and then you've also got the huge movement in the United States around Black Lives Matter, the US elections. I mean, there's just so much that's happened over this last year, and so much is in flux. But what's your basic thoughts about the year?
Yeah, I mean, we had all of that happen. We also had the tail end of one of the worst years for wildfires and climate upheaval. And we had all the things that didn't happen because of chiefly the pandemic. November of this year, we would have been looking forward to welcoming the COP conference to Scotland and really seriously discussing the global response to climate change. But that itself has been pushed on to next year, which means probably another year of delay before we actually get that firm action, although, you know, we have seen a bit more movement from various countries, including Scotland. The Scottish Government just today published its roadmap to becoming a zero-carbon nation by 2045. I haven't really digested all of it myself. It's a 250-page report. I've only had it for a couple of hours, and of course, we've been trying to wind down in this last week before we closed up for Christmas, not start entire new projects. But this is something that definitely we'll be visiting next year and responding to in detail, and, you know, seeing how well it chimes with thoughts that we've had, including our own Green New Deal plan, the Common Home Plan.
And when it comes to let's have a bit of a review as well of Commonweal's work over the year. It's been so substantial. I mean, I remember when we first went into lockdown and you and I and the Commonweal team, we were having all kinds of discussions about how we would intervene, how we would relate to it. And there's just been so much. We were first out the blocks when it came to proposing the kind of plans that we would require to rebuild the economy, and to do so in a way that would not just allow our society to recover from COVID, but also from a decade of austerity and cuts. And we released the Resilient Scotland papers, and I know you put a lot of work into this as well, Craig, but I mean, I was just quite staggered about how quickly that was turned around, and yet how substantial and detailed the proposals within the Resilient Scotland papers were and are. And we'll link to those below this podcast. But a lot of work's went into that, hasn't it?
Yeah, but the thing is that what we recognised when we started that project was that the solutions to this crisis substantially were the same solutions that we had been proposing for the remnants of the previous crisis, which was the 2008 financial crash, and also we recognized that if we did the worst thing that we could do as a response to this pandemic, which would be to build the economy back to exactly where it was in 2019, that would probably take about a decade. You know, that's how long it took us to broadly rebuild the economy after the financial crash. And, you know, we didn't even quite make that. The economy ended up far more unequal than it was in 2007. But if we did that, then we would exhaust all of our remaining time to deal with the climate crisis. So we recognised that the solution to this crisis had to be the one that also solved the next crisis, which is the climate crisis. So really, the plan to rebuild from this crisis was to launch straight into our previous work on the Common Home Plan, but also on our plans for an investment-led economy, for a well-being economy, an actual well-being economy. And all of the other work that Commonweal has really been campaigning about since we started in 2014.
And, of course, alongside that body of work, which I have to say, received a lot of media coverage. I mean, it was great to see that Douglas Fraser, the BBC's chief economics reporter, or editor, should I say, covered it in great detail, but caused quite a lot of debate. In fact, it caused, I think, so much of a debate that lots of the language was borrowed for the report of the Economic Recovery Group set up by the SNP and the Scottish Government. Although in that report, I think it would be fair to say that while a lot of the rhetoric was used, not so much of the substance, for reasons which we've talked about a lot on this podcast. But it wasn't just about how we rebuild from the virus. We also had a lot to say about the virus and the handling of the virus itself. Now, there's a number of different things that we can talk about here, but the thing that impressed me most in terms of the reports was your traffic lights report, when it was talking about how we could delineate areas of the country in terms of lockdowns. But if you want to talk about that, but also maybe just give listeners a little bit of a review of the various interventions that Commonweal made around the handling of the virus itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really goes back to mid-March now. I can't claim to be the Delphic oracle that predicted that it was all going to happen in Scotland at that point. I mean, I remember as late as the 11th of March, and this was well after things like the Nike conference and well after the Scottish Government was being briefed in private about the impact of this pandemic. I remember talking to yourself and other folk in the office on the 11th of March about saying, I think this, we might just get away with this one. It could be nasty, but probably regional, looking a bit like the SARS epidemic. By the end of that week, you know, it was clear that this was going to be a global pandemic, and we were then discussing how do we close down our office and keep everybody safe. And it was just at that point that we started looking at the strategy that was coming out in public from the Scottish Government, started looking at what other countries were doing and starting to compare them. And then I caught COVID. I caught COVID at the end of March, probably the day before the national lockdown. And that laid me out for 2 weeks solid. I was still feeling the effects for 2 months after that. But as I came back online after that fortnight in bed, then, you know, I'd been speaking to Robin McAlpine, our director, and he asked if I could draw up a plan for what it would take for Scotland to get this under control. And I found another plan that was being pitched at a UK level for a comprehensive testing strategy, a very, very intense testing strategy. We're talking everybody in the country being COVID tested once a fortnight or at least once a month, and doing extremely intense monitoring and isolating people who were showing positive tests. That plan wasn't implemented, hasn't really been implemented by many countries in the world, although a couple of in Asia have gone down this route. But we costed that plan. It would have cost Scotland $1.5 billion to maintain that program for about a year. But we also costed the economic impact of not doing it at about $15 million. And we'll see, you know, in the months and years to come, what the final economic impact to Scotland will be from what has happened, including from the measures that have been done. Now, as I say, that was an extremely intensive program, but we evolved our thinking over the next few months, again, learning from the countries that have tackled this pandemic as better than most. And we identified another strategy, the traffic light strategy that has been implemented by several countries, where, and now to an extent by Scotland, where you break the country into regions and you give each of them a score based on the state of the virus in that region, and you localize the response, whether it's merely keeping an eye out, monitoring the situation, but allowing things to be more or less normal, all the way up to you do not enter or leave this region except for exceptional circumstances, and everybody in this region is fully locked down. We published that plan in September, and we didn't get a very positive response from the Scottish Government when we published it, but lo and behold, a month later, they developed their own plan that looked very similar, has adopted many, not all, not by all means not all, but many of the recommendations in that paper. So between our campaigning and other avenues, like my writing in Source, our sister media channel, as well as very intense campaigning from some of our activists, and I'd like to give a shout out especially to Jean Kemp and Bob Gillespie. Bob has been a guest on this podcast. They and others were lobbying their local politicians extremely intensely to try and focus attention on this problem and to try and ramp up the strategic response to the virus. And as far as we can see, it has worked to a degree. It's not going as far as we would like it to be, but as I remind people, as a political lobbyist, it's almost my duty to say that. But we have seen improvements in the Scottish strategy, and we hope that we can continue to see those improvements as we move into this very vulnerable period now, where people start to get vaccinated and the sense of danger may start receding faster than the actual danger does. One thing I would not like to see is people assuming, well, more and more people are getting vaccinated. Of course, I haven't been vaccinated yet, but more and more people are vaccinated, so I'll be safe. I can do what I like. I really don't want that people to develop that attitude. So that's one of the things to look forward into 2021. This idea that we do need to keep up the prevention strategy as we move into that recovery phase.
So big interventions when it came to economic recovery, significant interventions when it came to how to handle the virus. Both of these were widely covered in the media and gained a lot of traction, not just in the independence movement, but well beyond it, including being raised at the daily briefing with the First Minister. And then there was a number of other initiatives which I think were extremely important. And you'll recall one of the major reports that Commonweal produced into care homes, which of course have been at the epicentre of lots of the debate and discussion around the handling of the coronavirus crisis. And there has been a really substantial, again, report written by Neil Kent, which was a real investigation into this. And that really not just hit the headlines, but was discussed in the Parliament. And I thought it brought to light lots of areas within our care system that not only need to be addressed as a matter of urgency, but require solutions, the kind of solutions that Commonweal have been presenting. Any comment about that?
Yeah, I mean, this again has launched a substantial change in the way that we view care in Scotland. Not so long ago, months rather than years ago, if you were to suggest something like nationalising all care in, the entire care service in Scotland, that was the preserve of the very far left, like us. But it wasn't really in the mainstream. Now that is a serious proposition. This is now part of the Scottish Government's programme for government to investigate the possibility of a national care service to do for social care what we did with healthcare in the NHS. There's already been a review into what that could look like. This is going to report back at the early part of 2021 in mid-January. We have submitted our thoughts on that, and understand that those will be published over the weekend. But we've also, you know, gone further. You know, Nick Kemp, who wrote that initial report, has been at the centre of our thinking on what a national care service might look like. He has gathered a bunch of very serious experts and stakeholders, you know, professionals in the field, people who work at the front line of care. We have formed a working group around this, and we are going to design our own thoughts, our own blueprint of what a national care system could look like. Because there are various models out there, there are various potentials that it could go down, and how far do you want to go with it? How comprehensive should it be? What could be the cost to the users be, which could be anything from a, you know, pay-as-you-go service, an insurance service, or a free-at-the-point-of-use service like healthcare is. So we're going to lay out our thinking on that, and we'll report back on that in the new year as well.
And alongside all of the policy work, I think it's safe to say that, you know, as a organisation, we feel that we've made some great strides forward this year. I mean, I've been extremely pleased with the level of intervention that we've had from a policy perspective, very pleased to see it having traction in the media and in the mainstream of political discourse in the country, but also have been really pleased at some of the work that we've been putting in behind the scenes about building up our volunteers base, about building up our capacities to ensure that these policies, that these great ideas aren't just things that sit on shelves somewhere, but that they become living documents, they become ideas around which people can mobilise, can organise, and can bring forward to make a reality. And that's really the kind of phase that we are going into next. And here, you know, Craig and I aren't going to be able to talk about everything that we are going to be doing, because, as I say, it is in the works and it is going to be launched next year. But Craig, you're someone who, you know, spends so much time and effort and putting so much of your talent and skill and knowledge into these policy papers. It must make you feel good as someone who designs and interprets and brings together policy to see these ideas actually getting a hearing, actually being raised in Parliament, being raised in the media, and also now being backed up by that kind of volunteer army that we've been developing to really get it out across the country.
Yeah, and it goes way beyond, you know, the satisfaction of maybe something that I personally have done, being raised in Parliament or being adopted by a political party or being adopted by the Scottish Government. It's seeing those volunteers engaging with these ideas and them independently pushing for these things to be implemented. I mentioned the work that folk have done on raising the issues around testing strategy, but a lot of our activists have also been working on areas like Pauline McNeill's Fair Rents Bill, the Mary Barber Bill, looking to try and implement a system of rent controls in Scotland. Again, Jean Kemp from Commonwealth Dundee was involved in this, but she's gathered a group of extremely tenacious activists around that as well. And they, when they heard that this rent control bill was likely going to fall by the wayside because of COVID, the Scottish Government was dumping everything that they could that wasn't COVID related. And because we have the elections coming next year and the breakup of the Parliament, anything that isn't concluded in this parliamentary session will just simply fall by the wayside and have to be reintroduced at a later date. Very galling for something like this rent control bill, which is a private member's bill. So it's a bill that has been brought by an opposition MSP, to have it just dumped by the Scottish Government because they're too busy to look at it is frustrating. So they lobbied and managed to get the signatures of MSPs from every political party, including the Conservatives, to get some support for this bill to go forward. And it started to make progress, but then it was dumped again.
Yeah.
Again, after a lot of pressure, it was brought back onto the book And we're now going to be looking at that in the new year as well. So that kind of thing. I mean, this is while I've been advising on it and while I've been involved in this campaign, this has been very much an activist-led initiative. So if we can start to see that, if we can start to see the broader Commonweal activist base, finding an issue that matters to them and seeing where they can apply Commonweal philosophy and ideals to their own area or to their own area of interest, and then to contact their local representatives and to push for it and to see that they can win. I mean, this really pushes us into a very exciting phase of Scottish politics where, you really can empower citizens and citizens can see that they are being empowered. Lobbying is not just something for, people behind closed doors. It's something that anyone can get involved with at any time, and you can win. And that's an exciting thing.
No, absolutely. It really is. So there's been lots this year, and amongst the real hardship and the real nightmare, I suppose it's been for everyone, and for some more than others, we have to say, during this year. We also want to say where we think that progress can be made as a result, and where we feel that we can push forward when it comes to our agenda for transforming Scotland, for making it a country which is free of poverty and inequality, and which harnesses its natural energy and all the rest of it, and which rebuilds not just our economy but our society as a whole. So, as we come towards the end of the last episode, Craig, I just wanted to get. I mean, it's difficult to make predictions at any time, and especially at a time like this. But looking ahead, looking forward to 2021, what do you suppose your sort of key objectives are when you forecast ahead at what you think's coming up?
I mean, I'll have to listen back to the podcast we made at the end of December 2019, and I'm fairly sure you asked me that question then. And well, look what happened. I mean, 2021, yes, we are going to be dealing with the recovery and then the rebuilding from COVID. So it's making sure that that happens in a way that does, as I say, lead us into solutions and that will. Protect us from the next crisis, the climate emergency, and will lead us into a resilient economy that can withstand shocks like this. We do have in May the Scottish elections coming up, and we are actively engaged with many of the political parties to see, what we can do to influence manifestos, to influence the direction there, and make sure that the Commonweal ideals, find root. And any party that wants to take on any of the policies within our policy library, and we stand ready to assist any that want to approach us and ask how they can do that. Beyond that election horizon, then we'll have to see what the new government is, whether it's an SNP majority government, whether it's a minority government as it currently is, whether there's some form of coalition or, what could happen from there? The big question beyond that, I guess, is what happened with the independent campaign? We are seeing now record sustained support for Scottish independence. 16 polls in a row now have shown our majority support for independence. The challenge for the independence campaign was to turn that not from a ceiling but into a floor, to make that the foundation of going into the next campaign. To see how we can demonstrate the desire for independence in a democratic way. That's likely to be an independence referendum, but how that comes about, or if it doesn't come about, what happens instead, to demonstrate that democratic support, and then what happens if we win that, what are the next stages? And we've outlined them in previous work, such as our book, How to Start a New Country. If the shop had still been open for Christmas, I'd be touting it as a wee Christmas present for folk. But unfortunately, it's not. The folk in the office, including Jonathan, are busy packing everything. All the elves are busy. So when we reopen the shop next year, I hope folk will take a look at that and get themselves briefed up on what happens the day after an independence referendum as we move into the next stage of Scottish politics, which would be building a new country.
Well, it's certainly going to be an interesting year, and no matter what happens, as this year has shown, Commonweal will be at the absolute forefront of the debate. We will be ensuring that the kind of ideas that embody the policies that Commonweal has put forward, not just last year, but over the last number of years, will take front and centre, and that we make sure that independence isn't some vehicle for narrow corporate interests, but is a gateway to a new future, a new economy, and a new society for the people of Scotland. That's what we are all about here at Commonweal. And as you've heard, over not just this episode, but all of the episodes throughout this year, every penny that we get in our direction, we put to good use. So if you do fancy giving us a Christmas present, a donation, whether it's one-off or whether it be becoming a monthly donor, you could do far worse, because be assured that everything that we get, we immediately put to use. We immediately make sure that it's going in the direction of getting the policies out there and of making change happen within within Scotland, and in many cases working with people outside of Scotland as well. So it's an international movement that we see ourselves as being part of. Next year is going to be a big one. Craig's outlined there's going to be lots of stuff coming up. We're going to have to see how it all goes, but one thing that we can be sure of, as I say, is that Commonweal will be front and centre. And with that, we'd like to thank you for listening, for sharing, and for supporting this podcast. And we're going to be back bigger and better next year.